Hello everyone. We are starting with Chapter 6, Foundation and Understanding of Employee Behavior. Let's see what's the learning objective for this chapter. Post completion of this session, we should be able to understand the biographical characteristics and abilities impacting an individual's behavior. The role, emotions, moods. I'm sure all of you have heard about emotions, moods, and you go through this every day. So the role that emotions and moods and emotional intelligence play in shaping our individual behavior. So basis our moods and our emotions, how do we actually display our behavior on everyday basis? The third one is the personality traits and values that impact an individual's behavior. I hope all of you are clear with the learning objectives. The concept of learning and its influence on behavior. So what is learning and how, when we learn, how do we influence and how do we change or how do we impact our behavior, how learning impacts our behavior. Relationship of attitude with individual behavior. What is perception and what affects our formation of perception. So how does perception get formed? How perception and decision making are interlinked and how they influence individuals' behavior. See, all these elements will ultimately lead into transformation or impact on your behavior. So we are going to see how all these elements are going to impact our behavior over a period of time. The role of cognitive biases and its influence on individual behavior. Let's introduce what this chapter is all about. Individual behaviors are shaped by our personalities and our experiences. Don't you think so? Each one of us from our childhood have probably been brought up with a certain experiences, whether it is to do with our personal life, whether it is to do with our professional life. We have gained experience over a period of time. So our behaviors over a period of time are being shaped with these elements. Our personality, our dominant personality, and our experiences. Various individual level behaviors impact the employee performance and satisfaction. Every work environment is different. Every work environment, every ecosystem is different. Every household is different. So everybody, every individual actually experiences the workplace or the environment differently. And how personality traits reflect people's characteristic patterns of thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. So personality traits will always, all of us are aware of personality. Each one of us belong to a different personality altogether. Okay, so personality traits reflects our characteristics and our thought pattern that we have, the feelings that we have. We may project our feelings, we may not project our feeling, it may be subdued, but how does it impact your behavior? And the personality types are often helpful in matching the individuals with organizational culture. So this is very, very important. Hence, personality trainings are taken so seriously in organizations. And now what we understand by biographical characteristics. Biographical characteristics are basically personal characteristics, just like your age, your gender that you belong to, if you have any disability or different ability, race that you belong to, length of the service in an organization, marital status, whether you're married, unmarried, single, committed, marital status. These are objectives and easily obtainable from personal records. So these are something which does not have too much of articulation. These can be found out easily from your database, from your from the record of your CV. Let us look at following biographical characteristics. Now let's see what all biographical characteristics we are going to come across and how do we actually take a note of it. So age of an individual affects the behavior at work. This is what is the general thought process everywhere. Job performance, your flexibility, your absenteeism, the way you produce in the organization are viewed to decline with growing age. So people think, we will consider that the moment you grow, the over a period of time when you have grown, as and when your age is, you're aging, your productivity, your, you know, flexibility in terms of, you know, taking things, maybe length of service, or maybe the absenteeism and all of those kind of over a period of time goes down as and when you age. This is what is the general thought process with regards to biographical characteristics. Gender. There are not too many key differences between two genders, right? Between men and women. There are not much of differences that we see. But those that get affected include, you know, things like competencies, like problem solving, your analytical ability, the drive, competition, to have a competitive edge, motivation, sociability, and learnability. So these are some of the factors that get impacted because of the gender is what they say. Let us look at the following more characteristics in detail. So a third one is they're talking about is tenure. The tenure of individual impacts the work-related behaviors. Okay, so these are absenteeism. If you're too relaxed, if you're not at all bothered about what's going on, you have been working in the organization for 10, 12 years together, so you're not bothered, you will take leave as and when you feel like, you'll be absent from your work. You are not producing, not making too much of a difference. Your job satisfaction is highly at question. All these things will depend on the tenure that you have served in the organization. It could be for a longer tenure. It could be also, the same thing can also be applicable for shorter tenures as well. That because you're new in the organization, you probably have not developed enough interest. You probably are going through absenteeism because you're still looking for another job. You're not happy here. Your job satisfaction is at question. Your abilities. Ability can is defined as person's capacity to perform the various tasks in a job, right? So different tasks are being allocated with regards to a job. So how do you perform? What is your ability to perform in each task? And abilities comprises of two factors. What are these two factors? One is your cognitive ability, and second is your physical ability. Now, what is cognitive ability? It's the ability of manipulation. It's arranged in a hierarchy with general intelligence being on the top. And physical ability is of two types: motor skills, which is your ability to manipulate, and the second one is your physical skills, which is your strength, which is your fitness. Okay, so these are the two abilities. So cognitive ability, which is more to do with the general intelligence, manipulation, analysis, all of that, analytical skills, all of these are your cognitive abilities. Second is your physical ability. It comprises of two types, motor skills and physical skills. Motor skills are your ability to manipulate objects, and physical skills are your fitness and strength. The ability job fit. What do you mean by ability job fit? The fit between the abilities of a person and the demands of a job. The job requires a certain level of vigor. Okay, so there's a certain level of competency which is required in the job. But however, your ability is only 30% below that. Okay, so how do we actually bridge the gap? So the fit between the abilities of a person and the demands of a job, or the desires of a person and the attributes of a job. So I would like to be in the shoes of a project manager, but I'm not sure if I'm ready enough. Okay, but I am right now a manager level resource. However, to become, I'm an assistant manager. I want to become the project manager. I want to lead the project. So for that, there is a substantial amount of experience that I have to gain. So what am I versus what is it that I need to fit into? Okay, so that's the ability job fit. That is a fit that is called as, okay? So which is part of your ability fit job. Job performance is improved in case of a high ability job fit. If your high ability job fit is there with a person, there is a high chance that there is a performance in the job. The type of ability is required depends on the requirements of the job. So it completely, totally depends on what is the requisitions that are mentioned about the job. Okay, so what are the skill sets that you should have to be able to be competent for the job? So emotions are feelings that are directed at someone or something. You know, you have gone through a loss. You are feeling really emotional about it to be able to get back your composure. So that's the emotion. So moods are less intense feelings. They are not as intense as emotions. It's not with a specific, it's not associated with a specific event. It can just act as a stimulus. Okay, so today my mood is not good. So hence probably whole day I will not be as chirpy or as sociable as I am always. So I'm in a off mood. So I will probably be restricted to, interacting with others and things like that. So that's what is your mood. So the difference between emotions and mood is explained in the table here. So emotions are caused by specific event, as I mentioned to you. Cause of mood is often general and unclear. It does not have a clarity. It just could be just simply you woke up with a bad mood. Somehow you're cranky today. So it's emotions are very brief in durations. It could last only in seconds probably. I felt very bad. Suddenly I heard the news. I really was taken aback. But I took my bath, I had my tea, I became normal. Okay, so it could be very brief. And moods, however, can last longer than emotions. Okay, it could be even hours or it could be even days as well. I'm in bad mood since 3 days, so I'm not even coming out of my house. I'm not talking to anyone. I'm not taking calls. Okay, so it could be like that. Emotions are specific and numerous in nature, like for example, anger, fear, sadness, happiness, disgust, surprise. Okay, so but moods are more generic. They are either positive or negative. And emotions are usually accompanied by distinct facial expressions. And moods are generally not indicated by any distinct expression. And emotions are more action-oriented in nature, and moods are more cognitive in nature. So that's the difference. So this is the difference between emotions and moods. Now the basic emotions. So there are numerous emotions in the world, which includes, anger, your frustration, your enthusiasm, your disgust, surprise, and sometimes sadness and feeling of love. All of these are your different emotions that are there in the world. However, most researchers have agreed upon only 6 universal emotions. And what are those? These are these. So can you see these 6 ones? Anger, disgust, fear, joy, sadness, and surprise. So these are the main 6 main agreed universal emotions. So the moods are basically either positive or negative. So positive mood is a mood which comprises of positive emotions, which are excitement, your self-assurance, your cheerfulness, when you are at the higher end of your positive mood. And it could be, you could be bored, you could be sluggish, and you could be tired when you are at the lower end of your positive mood. Hope that's clear to all of you. Negative mood, it's an aspect of your mood which comprises of negative emotions, just like your nervousness, stress, anxiety, when you're at the higher end of the negative mood. And if you're at the lower end of the negative mood, you could be relaxed, you could be tranquility, and you could be poised if you're at the lower end of the negative mood. What are the functions of emotions? Emotions are critical to rational thinking. When you're emotionally down or you're emotionally charged, you will always have obstacle towards rational thinking. So ability to have emotions help people in rational decision making, as emotions provide important inputs regarding the environment around us. Because otherwise we will just get bogged down with the emotion and we will actually not think about the pros and cons about the environment, about the ecosystem around us. And we will just take a decision on a complete emotional ground, and we will not be thinking rationally at all. So this will prevent us from rational thinking. So hence emotions needs to be dealt very well. Emotions drive ethics. It is very, very important. Feelings such as sympathy, for the suffering of others. If somebody is suffering, you know, you're feeling bad about it, you're feeling sympathized in the whole situation, guilt about our own immoral behavior. You know, I have done something because of, you know, an expectation towards a reward. But however, I'm not feeling really good about it. I'm feeling very guilty that I actually hurt lot many others in this, in the bargain. So anger about injustice which has been done to others, contempt of those who behave unethically. These are some of the examples of people's moral emotion. Okay, so these would actually drive your ethics. And emotional expression, it is a part of the emotion regulation process and functions as a way to communicate internal states to others. This is the way you will actually express it to others, the way your emotion will be expressed to others. It's a regulation process, you know, functions as the way to the way you will communicate your state of mind to others. So different sources of moods are, you know, from where actually moods and emotions originate. These are few of the sources. Your first one is your personality trait, your timings. It could be because of the timing, it could be because of the stress levels, social activities, the kind of sleep that you had, quality of sleep. Like some people or sleeps only 4 to 5 hours a day and they are good enough and they feel that they are very, very productive for the whole day because in those 4 to 5 hours, they don't get one wink of disturbance. So there's a complete sound sleep. So hence, Sleep Foundation says that, you know, it's not about the number of hours that you sleep. It's about the quality of sleep that matters. Some people cannot be as productive even sleeping for 8 to 10 hours. Whereas, compared to a person who sleeps, sound sleep for 4 to 5 hours are much more productive. Okay, so that's what is, again, quality of sleep. The kind of workout that you do, whether it is to do with your cardio, whether it is to do with your gym exercise, but the kind of workout that you do, the age and the gender. So let's see one by one how, discuss about each source now. The first source we're talking about is your personality trait. People have inherent tendencies to experience certain moods and emotions, so which does not depend on any incident. So they have tendency to kind of go through such experiences more often compared to others, or experience identical emotions with different degrees. So this is some personality. Some people have inherent tendencies, whereas the same thing may not be taken as seriously by another personality, right? The timings. People's emotions and moods also vary according to the day as well as the time of the day. Okay, so morning, some people might be highly emotional, emotionally charged, you know, they might be very, very going through very positive mood and emotion. But however, during the day, he's so fatigued and tired that by evening, he's cranky. By the time he reaches home, there's too much traffic. He's driving for 2 hours and he's unable to reach home on time. Every day, his hours are stretched. So finally, he gets disgusted and he goes through because of the timing. Okay, stress. It has negative correlation to moods, which builds over a period of time. Again, these could be interrelated as well. Because of time, probably the person is not able to have time for himself and hence he's stressed out. Social activities, tend to enhance our positive moods. Being involved in social activities, in social events, amongst people, it can highly elate your mood positively. It may have a minimal impact on your negative mood. Quality of sleep, as I mentioned to you, that Sleep Foundation has again and again mentioned that, quality of sleep is more important than the quantity of sleep. So hence, if at all you have to make a decision, your decision may just come into haste if you're already sleep deprived. So it's better you delay the decision, or what you do is you probably take help in making that decision, because it may not turn out to be very effective if you take a decision while you are having a sleep deprivation. Workout. Some work out daily and does not impact moods. However, the impact is not very powerful. Okay, and some people actually, and I myself realize that in the days I do not go for my walks or my or do any workout, I realize that is a day when I will not get a very good sleep. and it becomes, even if it does not, sometimes it becomes very psychological in nature, and you relate it to that, that probably I did not work out today, that I did not walk today, I did not drink enough water, that is the reason I'm not able to get a good sleep. Okay, so we psychologically we relate to it also. So that's how the emotions and moods against gets originated. Age. Emotional experience tends to be better with age because you gain experience lesser negative emotions are something that you go through. Okay, you're not impacted by negative emotions much because you have experienced substantially with as you have grown. Gender. Difference in gender does not lead to differences in experience as well as expression of emotions. Emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence is the ability to perceive your emotions, to understand the emotions and emotional knowledge, and to reflectively regulate your emotions so as to promote emotional and intellectual growth. This is what Mayer and Salovey in 1997 has defined. Hence, I'm not changing, I'm reading the way it is. Emotional intelligence is the ability, the way you will perceive the emotions and you will be able to regulate in due course of time and to be able to take effective and reflective decisions by regulating your emotions to promote growth and to promote your intellectual growth. This is what Mayer and Salovey has defined emotional intelligence. And EI is one of the most important topics of training and development now in across industries. It's the person's ability to perceive. These are the three most important factors of emotional intelligence. It's the ability of the person's perception of emotions in self and others. Okay, so how you perceive your own emotions and how you perceive the emotions of others. This is very, very important. The second is the person's ability to understand the meaning of these emotions. Now you understand, you perceive the emotions, but you also have to have the ability to understand what is the meaning of each emotion. And third, how do you actually regulate one's emotion accordingly in a cascading model? So how you actually step by step take a note of your emotions, you understand it, you identified, you understood it, and then how do you regulate it, right? So how do you perceive, how do you understand the meaning of each of these, and how do you regulate your emotions? So now you can see this graphic here. The emotional intelligence is the ability to identify, manage your emotions, and as well as people's emotions. Right? So this is what is the definition of emotional intelligence. It talks about these five things. It is comprised of all these five different parts which are being percolated from the environment. So social skills, effective social skills, which are effective at managing these relationships that benefits everyone who's involved. Okay, so everyone, everybody's relationship is being taken care of. Okay, so it's about managing everyone's relationship. Social skills. Second is your self-awareness. How aware are you about yourself? The ability to recognize your own emotions, strengths and limitations. Now you understand where are you good at, where are you, you still have improvement opportunities, where are you lacking. So all of that, understanding everything which is to do with you. Next is your self-regulation. Now when you understand your strengths and your limitations, now how do you regulate yourself? You allow you to wisely manage your emotions and impulses. So now when I go through emotions, I know that I like, for example, if I have to give a personal example, I will say that when I get nervous, my palms sweat, palms become very watery, and then sometimes I stammer as well. So then how do I control it? Because I'm cognizant of it, so I'm aware of my own self. Okay, so I've identified that. So then what I do is, now when I know that I'm getting nervous, I take precautions. I take enough water. I slow down in the process. And then I'm cognizantly regulating it it well. It's very difficult, but you know that this is what is happening. And what happens over a period of time, you start ignoring this. So my sweating of hands, I just ignored. And now I have seen that a lot has improved. I do not sweat anymore, and even if I do, I'm able to ignore that. Then when you ignore a thing, it will stop over a period of time. It will not impact you. So sometimes when you cannot control certain things, but if you're self-aware, you just need to know how to regulate it. Empathy, ability to identify and understand others' emotions. So this is very important. So what is others going through? What are others going through while I'm sharing this? I'm feeling bad about it. How are others feeling about it? What is their viewpoint? What is their perception? And then motivation. So being motivated consists of enjoying what you do, working towards achieving goals, and not being motivated by money or status. So as we spoke about earlier in couple of topics, chapters earlier, that we talk about that a lot of people intrinsic and extrinsic motivators, right? So we'll have to continue being motivated to be working towards our intrinsic goals, intrinsic rewards, and not so much get bogged down by, if there is no reward, does that mean that I'm not going to put my best foot forward? I should, right? Because I want to ultimately achieve my goals. So regardless of whether there is a reward mechanisms in place or not, I will still continue to, I'm self-motivated enough, and I will continue doing my best. So these are the five things that it's around: social skills, your awareness about self, self-regulation, empathy, and motivation. Okay, so this is what comprises of the full cycle of emotional intelligence. I hope everyone is clear with this graphic. Emotions and moods. Now, what are the positives of, what are the strengths of emotional intelligence, and what are the negatives of emotional intelligence? Emotional intelligence has an intuitive appeal. It's very inward looking. It's very intuitional. And absence and in negatives of EI is, emotional intelligence is, there is an absence of a common agreeable definition. There is no concrete definition about this till date. Okay, EI can predict parameters that make a difference. And here it says that the negative is that the measurement is very, very challenging and difficult. It can predict parameters, but it's not very easy. It is biologically based. And here it is seen as personality with a new name. They just say that, oh, it's another personality in another dimension. That is what a lot of people say. So that's what is the negatives of EI. Okay, so these are the positives, and the right hand side are your negatives. Emotion regulation. How do you regulate your emotion now? Emotion regulation is to identify and modify your emotions you feel, and thereby your moods. Okay, so it's about, as I said, as we spoke about in this graphic previously, it talks about being self-aware, okay, where you understand what are your moods that you go through, what are your emotions that you're going through, what happens, what are the impacts, or what are the triggers of your certain emotions, okay, certain moods, what triggers it. So when you're aware of it, how do you actually regulate it and you modify your behavior? Some examples of activities that help in emotion regulation. So some of the, like I gave you, that I ignore, and that's how I kind of got rid of it. Okay, it still happens, but I ignore it. Okay, so some examples of activities that can help you in emotion regulation: thinking more pleasing thoughts. So whenever you get bogged down with this negative mood swings, you think about something completely positive, completely pleasing. Think about something which is outside. Think about some reward that you have received. Think about some good things which has happened to you in your life. So immediately start thinking more pleasing, bring some pleasing thoughts. Second is suppressing your negative thoughts. You just ignore it. You just overlook it. You just let it be. Let it be. Do not let it come up on the surface. Let it be below. Distract yourself. Just watch TV. Speak to someone, pick up the phone and just talk to your friend, or maybe completely read a book which is very, very fast reading and very, very fun. Watch a comedy, all these kind of things that you can do to be able to regulate your emotions. Engage in relaxation techniques, reappraise the situation. Okay, so if you do some breathing exercises, some relaxation activities also will help you to get rid of negative emotions. Will help you, also help you to bring your emotions under control. Now, emotions and moods at your workplace. Now, while hiring, employers must consider EI as a factor, specifically for high social interaction role. If you're hiring for a role which requires high amount of interaction with people globally, nationally, you definitely have to be cognizant about the EI level of this person. Okay, because this person has to have high ability on emotional intelligence, because he will require a very, very, the role requires affinity and, you know, interaction levels with social situations. So hence, you need to be very careful while selecting the right person for this role. While decision making, positive moods or emotions encourages influenced individuals to use rules of thumb to make good, quick decisions. Okay, so rule, this is something that most of the organizations actually prefer, that, you know, you prefer, you just follow the thumb rule. Okay, that is a that is a one of the legacy that we have been following in the company. So let's take the decision based on the thumb rule. Okay, so it will help you to come to decisions in, you know, quickly, and you'll save time. And enhance problem solving skills for superior solutions. So these are some of the positive moods which it implies. It encourages encourages the individuals to use rules of thumb, and it also helps you to make quick decision making. Poor moods and emotions make people slow at your at the process of processing the information, weighing too many options rather than just the most critical one. They will just keep, you know, evaluating too many options. Finally, they will, it will be very difficult for them to zero into one. So this is how it affects the decision making. How does it affect the creativity? Positive moods aid in generating more original ideas and options. So this aids when you're positive. It says, the research says that you are more creative. You think more constructively. You think more, you know, bring in much more ideas than when we are in a low mood or a negative mood. People experience positive moods or emotions tend to be more flexible and open in their thinking. The research also says that people who experience, who are constantly positive enough, positive moods, they will tend to be more flexible. They will be open to ideas. They will be open to making, you know, thinking out of the box. They will, it will also help them to be more creative. This is what positive moods renders. How does it affect motivation? Research also have displayed that significance of moods and emotions on motivation. Some take it as a challenge, and some are motivated to, as I said earlier, that stress can lead into eustress or distress. Eustress means stress has taken you, elated you to the next level to be able to perform superlative, and or the stress has taken you overwhelmed and overburdened, and hence you have stretched yourself and going through distress, which is impacting your health negatively. So while some take it as a challenge and motivated to do better, while others can just get objected and get, they get just dejected and be demotivated. How does it affect leadership? It appeals in messages, it tends to make the leaders effective if you are making emotional appeals, because people connect to it. Emotional expressions are very critical to people's agreement or disagreement. So when you listen to a leader, and if the leader comes around saying that, you know, we have lost, let's take the example of pandemic loss that we had in the last couple of 1.5 years, 2 years, then the head of the organization comes to the management, comes in the to the staff and says that they do an earnest appeal that, you know, we used to work 5 days a week and we were really happy and we were very productive. We did really well. This is what we achieved. This is what are the names that we have done. These are the impacts that we have created across. However, in the last 1.5 year, we have really lost a lot of key resources of ours. We had to shut a couple of offices as well. We have to downsize it, and now we are getting back, slowly coming back to normal. So we will like to pull up, you know, scale up the whole business. So hence it will be an earnest appeal that each one of you should be okay with at least working 2 Saturdays in a month. So it's a emotional appeal that the management is making, with the leadership is making, to with the pretext of having the organization better. And if you're growing the organization, employees will also grow. So employees join hands and they kind of go with the leadership. So it brings in a lot of positives. So it affects leadership to a great extent. So leadership's enthusiasm and positive emotions always energize the employees, as it conveys sense of confidence, competence, positivity, and fun. So this will, so if the leadership is coming across very, very positive, very, very enthusiastic, you know, energizes the others who are working along with them. Job attitude. People who had a satisfying day at work tend to be in a better mood at home than that evening, and vice versa. So people who had great day at work, you know, probably got appreciated, had a wonderful meeting, the project got closed, all of that has happened. So this person comes back at home also, he behaves positively, right? So it's a lot of people, attitude is always based on the previous hours of the day. Okay, so evening will depend on how it worked for the whole day for you. So divined workplace behaviors now. Now, what are some of the divined behaviors? This implies behaving in a manner that violates organizational norms. So organization will have a certain code of conduct, and for and some of your behaviors will be completely working against the code of conduct. So mostly this can be attributed to negative emotions. People experience negative emotions, specifically like anger. They might get angry on something. They might tend to resort to defiant. If you're angry about something, probably you had a very bad you know, start of the day. You probably had you know, while you were driving also, you had a lot of traffic, or you met with an accident, a small accident. You had to go, you know, register a complaint in the police station, and then you reached office. Obviously, you're already, your anger has already been triggered to the next level, and you resort to, you, your behaviors will be deviant, which will be against the organizational norms. This results in a chain reaction, since due to their hostile behavior, others also become antagonistic. So what happens if you behave negatively, if you trigger your negative emotions and you get, you know, you get into a hostile behavior. So people around you will also be antagonistic about your behavior, about your negative mood, and it will prevail throughout the organization. So it will kind of spread like a wildfire. Because you're behaving like that, everybody else is also going negative about you, right? Top three most important drivers of general workplace happiness. So this is something that there's a very recent in trend. Social values, relationship with the colleagues, and relationship with your direct manager. So these are the, they said that these three are the most important drivers of your workplace happiness. So generally when you're at work, social values play a very, very important role. So being respectful and equal treatment. So everybody should be treated fair. Everybody should be respected. It's not that I, as a subordinate, will always be able to, always should respect my leader or my manager. But however, the others treat me, the manager treats me very badly. That's your social value. Okay? So everybody should be treated equally at work. Relationship with colleagues. The relationship with my colleagues is important for my overall happiness of work. 8, 9 hours, 10 hours, you're there at your work. If you, if your relationship with your peers are not healthy enough, you definitely will not be having a great time in your workplace. You'll feel like getting back to home as early as possible, right? Because you don't like to spend time there. Your relationship with your direct manager, your direct supervisor. The relationship with your direct manager is important for my overall happiness, because obviously with your direct manager is what you're exactly, you know, you're throughout the day working to be able to cater to the needs of your immediate supervisor, how he instructs you to be able to achieve your goal over a period of time. You will have to constantly work under your direct manager, and that will impact your performance appraisal as well. So hence, these three are the most important drivers of my being happy at my workplace. Thank you so much.